My name is Mary Angela DeGrazia Tutucci. I'm a longtime patient with multiple motility disorders, including pseudoobstruction, gastroparesis, aplasia, diffuse esophageal reflux. So many you forget, and a host of other medical problems. In 1991, we were very fortunate to start this nonprofit organization, the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders. It has grown considerably beyond what our expectations are. We have a very elite group of medical professionals and dietitians who are part of this organization. Last year, we had the privilege of having a patient family conference, and that was in as a milestone event for our 25th year of service. So we're in our 26th year. I always say it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing because we are still in existence and able to reach out and help patients and their families. The bad thing is that we're still needed because there are so many patients and family members who are in need of that kind of help. So Brittany is going to be co-facilitating this group today, and I just want to say a few things.
Mary Angela.
How we orchestrate this particular meeting. If you would like to talk during this meeting, you can just say your first name, and that way identify the name with the person we're talking. And so every time you speak, if you can say your first name or make up a first name, if you always wanted to be a certain person, you can certainly do that. If you are having trouble jumping into the conversation, then you can always call out Brittany or Mary Angela or the Laura that's here. Laura has a very deep voice. Laura, say hi. Laura is probably resting. And you can call out our names, and we will be sure to get you into the program to speak. If you don't want to speak, that's fine. We would like to encourage you. And just be mindful that there are a lot of people in this program, so we want to make sure that we get a lot of people time to talk if they would like to. With that, I'm going to introduce Brittany. Brittany is a chronic intestinal obstruction patient, and she's going to elaborate a little bit about her background. Brittany?
Hi, everybody. Thank you all for joining the conference today. Just a quick background on my life. I have had pseudoobstruction since birth. I am now 32 years old, which is somewhat of a miracle since 30 years ago they did things a lot differently for people with pseudoobstruction. I have had my entire colon removed and 17% of my small intestine, resulting in a permanent ileostomy, which is where they bring the end of the intestine up to the abdominal wall, suture it in place, and you attach an ostomy bag, and that's how you go to the bathroom. I am also on, I have a central line, which is a semi-permanent IV line, to infuse TPN, which is total parenteral nutrition, so that's how I get all of my nutrition. I am able to eat and drink depending on how I'm feeling, depends on what and how much I can eat and drink. However, I don't absorb enough of what I consume to sustain life, which is why I'm on TPN. I also suffer from chronic GI bleeds that at this moment are still still have an unknown cause. However, those have landed me in a little bit of a pickle a time or two or 10 in the past few years. I am very lucky to have been asked to volunteer and co-facilitate this group now through the AGMD. It is something that I've always wanted to do. Along with my physical issues, I also battle with anxiety and depression, and I believe that they kind of go hand in hand with my disease. My anxiety and depression will wax and wane depending on how I am feeling. Sorry, my dog decided she needed to exit the room right at that moment. Sorry about that. So today's topic is going to be on relationships. We are all social beings, and it's in our DNA to interact with other humans. But creating, maintaining, and even breaking relationships all become magnified when you're living with a motility disorder in your life. So I plan a discussion on all types of relationships and how they're impacted by motility disease. I just wanted to start by saying that I don't want to just focus on, you know, intimate relationships, but also friendships. And one of the things that I truly believe is if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of or nurture other relationships. So is there anybody out there today who would who has anything that they would like to talk about regarding relationships and the impact that it's had by motility disorders? Go ahead.
This is Anand, and I have a friendship relationship with a man that is, we met on Valentine's Day in the second grade back in 1984.
Oh, wow.
And his name is Brian. He is blind and hearing impaired, and also he has GERD. But he has been very supportive, although when I got my motility disorder, his first reaction was, if I do decide to marry you down the road, will I have to be, you know, doing the enemas? At first it was hard for him to deal with the paresis and knowing that I was going to be more, you know, disabled with that. And I said, no, my sister would help. And, you know, you would not have to do the enema part. But he's been very, we celebrated our 33 years anniversary Tuesday. Unfortunately, I couldn't call him because he was out on a trip. But he's been very supportive. And as far as relationships go, part on friendships is sometimes when with my motility disorder, which is GP, and I have other health issues, the arthritis, the CP, the blindness, all of that. And sometimes I had a friend that told me, well, they don't know, some friends don't understand why I don't enjoy food as much as I used to. I have a birthday coming up March 16th, and some of my friends say, you would rather enjoy music than you like music over food? And they're like, I'm like, yeah, I love music over food because it doesn't make me ill. I'd rather have the music thing than spending, say, $20 on a meal that I know I'm just going to be vomiting.
Right.
And so friendships has been difficult because there are people, I've come to realize there are people that, you know, will be my friend, you know, no matter what. And then there are people that say, well, we don't want to come over. We don't understand. Like I have a friend, she's like, well, I don't want to come over because I can't take you out to a big restaurant and enjoy food. She doesn't want to discuss vomiting, and she's like, she really doesn't want to come over to do with me because of the vomiting and the unpredictability of the nature of the disease. And I might as well add to Brittany that because of the disease, motility and all, I do have anxiety and depression. I am on two types of different medication for it, and that has helped because I'm always smiling, even though sometimes I don't feel good. you know, I'll take a bite of food and then feel miserable. Mm-hmm. Glad to be here today. Thanks for having this, Mary Angela.
Thank you for sharing. To anybody else out there too, do you feel like you can't talk about your disease or your child's disease or your spouse's disease or the motility disease in your life? Do you feel like with other people you can't talk about it because they don't understand?
Hi, my name's Patricia.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I just want to say yes, 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 and yes. You know, like I've always found, you know, we all know this. Some of us don't look sick unless you see the distended belly. You know, that's the only real physical sign. And being a younger lady, I've been dealing with this for 20 years, but I've always tried to hide that belly and been able to hide it pretty well. So that's the, like, physical thing that really shows. And if you look healthy, I mean, people just haven't got, they just cannot reconcile in their minds for you to explain how sick you are. If mm-hmm. they don't have a buzzword like cancer, or if they can't see something on you, like a missing leg. And I just find it to be, yes, it's impossible. It's like, I mean, the only thing they can relate to is a stomach ache, I feel like. I mean, that's what they think you have. And it just adds insult to injury.
Yeah.
We've all talked with this. I just the other night saw that movie, Miracles from Heaven, and I was thrilled to see it because on the big screen, I don't know if anybody's seen it, but
yeah.
you had a doctor using the words motility disease or motility disorder.
Yeah.
And you had a little girl, you know, saying, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And a doctor just saying, you know, these things can be really serious. Granted, not everybody is as fatal, but that doesn't mean it's not, you know, I say with the utmost respect to anybody who's been touched by it being fatal, but after 20 years, there are days, many days, where I wish mine was fatal or would mm-hmm. take me because the torture is just slow and unending. So, yes, I'm sorry, back to relationships. Yeah, difficult to talk to people because they haven't a clue what you're talking about. They have nothing to relate it to until I find once in a while a friend will come to me and be like, oh, I had this awful flu for 3 days and I thought of you and how do you do it every day? But then that's there and gone, you know.
Right.
2 weeks later, the same people are like, well, can't you just? Can't you just? No,
yeah.
I can't just.
Yeah.
And the pain of the solitude of it, of not dating. I've not been able to date in 20 years. I mean, I've missed my entire young adulthood. You know, I'm going to be 44 soon. I haven't had a boyfriend since I was maybe 20 or when this really kicked in. I can't make plans. I can't keep plans. I can't. Nobody understands that. Nobody understands that you have to be able to set up plans and keep them to, you know, everybody always says, you'll find somebody, somebody will love you with it. Well, the problem is not finding somebody to love me with it. The problem is being able to invest the time to spend with somebody and you can't make plans.
Yeah.
You know, I can't go online dating and make a plan because I tried it for 10 years and, you know, it was like I couldn't keep the date. So
yeah. That's
it. It's just, yes, it's a never-ending, very unique hell that is just
understood. Yeah. And I do understand where you are coming from. Growing up with this disease, you know, you definitely are not alone, but growing up with this disease, and I too spent, you know, basically most of my 20s, you know, single, and, you know, many of those I was homebound, not being able to go out, I couldn't work. So where do you find somebody if your whole world consists of four walls? So I definitely understand that, and I don't think anybody with motility issues hasn't you know, come across a friend or two. Ooh, somebody's not happy. you know, a friend or two who has not been able to support you with this disease. Some of the things that I've found to be helpful with friendships and relationships is the fact that you kind of have to take care of yourself first. And just like if you were to, you know, go to high school with a friend and then you two were to split off and go to two different colleges, and that distance and time, you know, split up your friendship, would you blame yourself for that? No. You would think, oh, well, you know, we grew up, our lives went two different paths, and that's okay. But I find that a lot of people with chronic illness, especially motility disorders, blame themselves when relationships fail or relationships, you know, split apart. Has anyone blamed themselves for, has anyone else blamed themselves for a relationship going awry or going astray?
The only thing, this is Patricia again, that I blame myself is not, I mean, some of it was not, you know, before I knew what was wrong with me, I didn't know, but probably trying to keep it under wraps for too long and not tell people the truth. But no.
Okay.
I don't know.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi, this is Laura.
Oh.
I just wanted to comment on your relationship question about talking about it with family or friends.
Yes.
I have a wonderful husband, caretaker. I can say anything to him. However, I have parents and a very large extended family that the parents, A, don't want to hear it. They just don't want to hear it. They will find any excuse to get away from me if I say anything about it. And in their eyes, you know, for like my father, there's no commercial like I was hearing. You know, it's not cancer. It's not a word they know. So they don't, it doesn't really exist in their minds, or it can't.
Yeah.
Again, because I look too well.
Yeah.
I look okay. So they can't think, you know, they can't understand it, and it makes it very hard. Because when you are disabled and this is kind of your life, you know, it's one of the main things you have to talk about because it's all you have to talk about. Or not all, but a big portion of it. And it does make it very hard to not be able to get things off your chest. Just to say them, you know, that and get them off your chest to a friend or a family member. And it's very, very difficult because most of them, they don't understand it. You can't, you know, how can you understand these diseases if you don't have it?
Right.
So they don't get it and they lash out instead of, you know, because they don't understand it, they kind of lash out at you more than if they did understand it right off the bat. And it's very, very hard. I've lost a lot of my family.
Whoever dogs those are, could you mute your line?
I love
them. Here, all dogs.
Sorry.
Are you Brittany who has dogs that whoever it is, if you can you can always call back, but we can have a whole program just talking about the benefit of pets.
Yeah.
But talking about human relationship with regular people. So I just wanted to interject. Know that if you are on speaker or you're using your device, we can hear things in the background, so it's important that the background noise be more on the quiet side. Okay, Brittany, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Thank you, Laura. It is difficult because you want to be able to express how you're feeling about things, but if you have friends or family members who don't want to hear it, you know, it feels like there's a there's a rejection, because that is, it is part of your life, and they are rejecting part of your life, a major part of your life, too. I know right before Laura spoke, somebody else was trying to speak in. I don't know who that was, so if you want to talk.
That was me. It's Melissa.
Oh, hi.
Hey,
hi,
Melissa.
Hi, Miss Brittany. Hi, Miss Laura. How are you?
Okay.
I was just going to say, you were asking about people feeling responsible for relationships breaking up, and, you know, I've been married for almost 30 years. I'm not having too much difficulty in that area, but, you know, I have I'm a member in a lot of online groups, and I see that frequently in there, where people feel like, because they can't, maybe they think they can't do their part of the chores, and they can't go out like they used to. I have some people who feel guilty because, like, they get sick at night and they keep their spouse up. And so, you know, I've even had them say that they go and sleep on the floor or the couch to accommodate their spouse, mm-hmm. and they have tremendous guilt for that.
Yeah.
Now I must be, you know, the most insensitive person on the face of the earth, because I'm like, you know, I'm the sick one. If anybody's going to be sleeping on the couch, it is not going to be me. and, you know, when I go into a room, a family event or something, we're going to talk about gastroparesis. My family's going to know. They may not want to know, but they're going to know what it is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my hairdresser knows what gastroparesis is. Everybody knows. So I kind of have gotten to the point where, you know, I'm not trying to be insensitive. Obviously, that's a joke. But I don't really care what they think anymore. I care that they care about me. I want to be sensitive to them. But if they can't understand it, then, you know, I'll try my best. And if they can't, they can't. That doesn't mm-hmm. change the fact that it exists and that it limits my behavior.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I've also found, and it's true for, you know, all relationships, yes, we need to talk about our, you know, our feelings and what we go through with having different motility disorders. But I also think it's very important to also have, you know, that other part of your life to bond over, to talk about, you know, talking about things, you know, with your friends, like books, movies, TV shows, whatever, to have that kind of part where you're not always in your disease. And obviously, if you're, you know, in a flare or things like that, you're definitely in your disease and you can't really think about anything else. But when you are feeling well enough to, you know, talk about other things, or using it also to distract yourself when you are in, you know, some sort of flare. I know often when I'm in a flare, I will, you know, I try to distract myself. So I will want to talk about other things to try to keep my mind off of what's going on. I don't know if there's any parents on the line here. I think there are, but do any parents here find that it's difficult on their relationship with their spouse, significant other, having a child with a motility disorder? My son. Hello?
I heard somebody's son.
Okay. I'm hearing, like, beeping on my line. Am I the only one?
No, sorry, it's me. Somebody's calling in. I can't stop it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want to say, I was starting to think I was hearing things, that's all.
Oh,
not
Jesus,
a hearing.
Not stopping. Oh, come on, people. I don't know how many times my phone rings. This is ridiculous. Okay, let me call right back.
Okay.
Let me call right back in, because this is wrong.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Okay. Oh, no.
I don't think it's her.
It's not her. Uh-oh.
Calling the office, but you know, the message doesn't last that long.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to mute myself. I'm back on. Tell me if the sound disappears when I'm on mute.
Okay.
Myself, a minute. Here?
No, it was still there.
Okay, so it's somebody else. All right, well, let's see if we can proceed without that. In
okay.
spite of it.
Yeah.
That way, all right.
Okay, so obviously we all have different relationships that we think about and we struggle with or don't struggle with. One of the things that I have found...
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, can I help you?
Uh-oh.
I think I picked up the wrong line.
Yeah.
Were you holding for someone?
No. This is a conference call. I'm not sure how this happened.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm sorry about that then. I'm not sure how it happened either.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, there's a... No, and it's still here.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Let's proceed. I'm going to see. Okay. I maybe meet other people just to see if it's somebody else. But go ahead.
Okay.
I think it's disappeared now.
Yeah, I think it's disappeared now, though, which is great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so like I was saying, different relationships, you know, are impacted by this disease. But one thing that I found is, you know, you have to come to accept that you have a motility disorder or that you have a family member with a motility disorder. And in that acceptance of it, and when you learn to, you know, live your life and love your life with it, I have found that that is when you're more open to relationships of all sorts. And it's very important to not keep the toxic relationships in your life that that don't support you. If there was, you know, something in your life that you believe in wholeheartedly and you're very passionate about it, and you had a friendship with somebody who thought the complete opposite, you know, you wouldn't feel bad for either not talking about that that subject or, you know, in time that relationship drifting off into two different directions. Sorry, I was just flipping my notes here. Does anybody find that their relationships, sorry, I just lost my total train of thought there.
Brittany,
oh,
while
sorry,
you're...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you remember?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Hey, regarding relationships, this is, yes, Mary Angela. That it's important to note that whether it's family member, whether it's friend, whether it's partner, no matter what, coworker, there are some people, and I have said, written about it a million times, there are some people that I've learned who really care and want to learn as much, mm-hmm, as they can. There are some people in this world who just want to get highlights but don't want to go into the detail. There are other people who will always pull the conversation back to what's going on in their lives and try to say, yeah, I had the flu for a long time, I, you know, I get it, and you let that go. There are some people who won't even ask you how you're doing. There are other people who just don't want to know. And the reason may be because they don't want to deal with illness, or that's what we hope, or that it may be that they don't care. But I think the majority of people really who don't respond, they don't want to deal with anything with illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's important to accept, that if a person isn't responding the way that you're expecting them to, and people will disappoint no matter what, it's important for you to be okay with that, because if you keep on carrying and saying, why, you know, what is going on, why won't they listen to me, you have to understand that other people are coming from a different perspective. They're not the one with the chronic illness. So their ability to understand, and there are some people who will never get it. No matter how many times you try to explain it, they just don't get it. And you have to be okay with that, too. It's just in their perspective and their walk in life, they're incapable of understanding. Mm-hmm. So it's not only accepting your own illness, but accepting that some people are just not going to respond the way you want. And it's hard to accept that. It took me years to accept that. But when you do, you're battling so many other war fronts with illness, trying to become stabilized or trying to figure out what's going on with your diagnosis or a new diagnosis or talking with a doctor, whatever it may be, it's important that you learn to accept that, because once you do, it saves your energy, helps you mentally on coping as well. Go ahead, Brittany.
No, that's very true. And acceptance is part of it. And I think another thing is that we put a lot of expectations on everything in life, but we also put a lot of expectations on relationships, and people can't live up to all of those expectations, unfortunately. And, you know, we also have different people that come into our lives at different times for different purposes, and I know Mary Angela has talked about it before, that when she's in the hospital, different family members kind of go into a role, into different roles, and that's how, you know, all relationships are. Every relationship you have is meant to fill a different role. And we also have to, you know, there's a lot of stress that goes on with having a motility disorder in your life. You know, you have the stress of diagnosis or misdiagnosis, treatments, different treatments, doctors. And one thing that, and you can't control it. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have control over a lot of motility, of things that go with motility disorders. But the one thing we do have control over is ourselves, as far as taking care of ourselves. And yeah, sure, you can take care of yourself as much as you want with taking your pills on time and, you know, doing the diets or following the correct quote unquote diet for whatever your diagnosis is. But if you aren't taking care of your mental health as well, that will impact your GI health. There is so much research being done, especially right now, between the correlation between the gut and the mind and how they both impact one another. And I'm sure if anybody with motility disorders can know, you know, when you get stressed out, 9 times out of 10, you're going to end up in a flare, especially if you're very stressed out. And I know personally, with growing up with this disease, I have put so much pressure on myself to maintain and keep friendships that weren't any good for me. But I put so much pressure on myself to keep those that I ended up basically making myself sick and one way or another ruining those friendships anyway. So it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that. Is there anyone else out there who would like to talk about anything regarding, you know, relationships? It doesn't have to be intimate relationships at all. It could be friendships, parent, child, anything about, you know, social aspects too?
This is Patricia again. I'm 43. I'm in Chicago. And, I mean, mostly I've given up all hope of ever dating again or doing anything but it's still an extreme heartbreak for me. I mean,
yeah.
Really heartbreaking. And I go through different periods of my life where I'm like, you know, I'm fine. I've accepted it. This is what it is. I've definitely learned to accept lots of things over time because it makes life a lot easier. But I guess something that nags at you is a continual heartbreak. I go through periods when I don't accept it and I still find a little slice of light or hope that maybe I could. And I guess, you know, I wouldn't even know how to, you know, if I went out on a date and I made it onto a first date, what do you say? How do you begin to try to explain to somebody? You know, I wouldn't even know what to say anymore.
Right.
To try and to get to a second date if the person liked me. You know, like,
yeah.
You can't disclose so much on a first date, but in the case like this, you also can't disclose.
Right.
I mean, you can't not disclose.
Right,
that's what people
right.
always say to me, like, can't you just go on a few dates and get to know them first? I'm like, well, no, I can't because let's say I make it on the first date and I have to cancel the second, third, fourth, and fifth dates. I need to disclose, you know, you have to give something up front.
Yeah.
Without giving too much. And I don't ever know, like, what would that be? How would that look? What would it smell like? Any advice?
Well, Patricia, first of all, we're neighbors because I live right outside Chicago. So we're neighbors here.
Well, I'm actually in Naperville.
Oh, I'm in Carroll Stream. So we really are neighbors.
Yeah, no kidding. We are. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, hi.
Yeah. Hi. I definitely understand. And you are very right because you can't, you know, on a first date, you don't want to, you know, quote unquote, normal people don't go on a first date and tell them, you know, their life history, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, we can't go out on a first date and not give them some sort of information about us, especially if, you know, a lot of first dates or a lot of dates or a lot of social gatherings revolve around food. And
right.
What do you say if you're sitting at the table and you can't eat or you can only eat a tiny bit? And that is something that, you know, everybody has to decide for themselves how much to disclose and when. And it's different for every person. I can tell you one personal experience, and I'll disclose, first of all, this is not a good personal experience here, but when I was in my early 20s, I was actually probably at the best health that I had ever been at. I was off of TPN at that time. I was at a good weight. I was maintaining that weight. My pain was under control. I really wasn't battling much nausea. So the only thing that was kind of abnormal for me, besides for going into flares and stuff, was the fact that I had an ostomy. And I was out on a date. I had met this guy, and we really hit it off. And we dated a couple times. And it was getting to that point where I'm like, well, I kind of have to disclose about having an ostomy. And like a lot of people, you know, you look good on the outside, so people don't necessarily know anything's wrong with you. And I told him that I had a rare disease. I told him that I used to be on an IV. I told him all of that. And then I told him about my ostomy. And he was okay with everything except for the ostomy. After I told him about that, I never heard from him again. He didn't even bother to break up with me. So that left a very sour taste in my mouth. And
sure.
Obviously, you know, not everybody has to deal with ostomies, but, you know, what do you say if you have to excuse yourself and get sick? Or, like you had said, you know, canceling dates. Does anybody else have any experience doing that kind of stuff or canceling plans and how you explain that or how much you disclose to people?
This is Shelley.
Oh.
Go ahead,
Shelley.
You can go ahead first and then I'll go.
Okay,
this is Brandy. I tend not to make plans at all because I spend at least half the day in bed. And I never know when I'll be okay and when I won't be okay. And I had spinal fusion, so I have to Uber it everywhere. So, like, if I'm not close to home, I get major, major anxiety, which turns into a panic attack and a flare-up and all this stuff. And I just, like, I don't know. I feel like it's easier for me to keep friends if I don't see them, if I just talk to them, like, on, like, texting or whatever, or, like, have them come over for a little bit. But I don't disclose that much. Like, my Facebook page is pretty much, like, gastroparesis and MSA awareness. But I don't think, like, any of my friends really realize what it is except that I'm tube-fed. I don't want to be that toxic friend. I don't want to be a downer. But I don't feel well most of the time. And I don't want to show that. So I pretend to be okay. And the only way I look not okay is my weight. And everyone thinks that once my weight is normal, I'll look normal, I'll feel normal, and everything will be fine. So it's really difficult. I don't know. I feel like I'm the one who burns bridges because I just, like, I pull away. Like, I feel like I know most of my friends can't handle it. And even my parents think that, like, once my weight is restored, I'll be fine. All this will be over. And, like, that's all they focus on. And, like, I don't know. Like, when they visit, I'm in bed all day. I feel awful. But, like, I can't – I don't know. It's just too risky to make plans for me. It's too risky for me to leave the house. And the only people who know how sick I am are, like, I have, like, two friends who will visit me in the hospital, and, like, half the time I have to send them home because I'm just, like, too incapacitated. But I know that my friends couldn't handle it, so I just don't. And they're good friends. They're good people. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it's too heavy for people, and I don't want to be a toxic friend.
I can appreciate that. But you also have to, and obviously I do not know your friends, and, you know them best, but you also have to give your friends a chance to be there for you and to step up. It's funny that some of the people that have actually stepped up and been there for me the most are the people that I never thought would. And maybe giving them the chance to visit you, not necessarily in the hospital, but come out, come over and hang out in, my room and watch TV or watch a movie or play a game, and even maybe say, I can only, visit for a half hour. But
yeah, I think that's part of the problem is that, like, when people come over, like, I actually had a friend come over yesterday, and it's always, like, an hour because she always has to pick up her son. So it's perfect. But, like, yeah. I had friends come over Sunday who are, like, who actually know more than most of my friends know, but they were here for 4 hours. And I was just, like, I kept getting up to take, like, nausea and pain meds, and, like, I really needed to be in bed. And, like, I didn't know how to express that without, I don't know. Maybe I do need to give them more credit.
And, and this is something that I advocate for and about the health, the self-care part, is I've gotten to the point where I have friends who seriously just will not leave. And I think we all know those kind of people where you're just like, all right, can you just please go? And you know what? Now I give myself permission to say, you know what? I feel like crap. I need to go lay down. And they say, okay, I'll go. And, that it's tough. I'm not saying it's easy. And you don't want to be, I'm Miss Polite. I don't want to be rude to anybody. So a lot of times I say, I really don't want to be rude, but I don't feel good. I really need to lay down. So, maybe we can get together another time, maybe we can get together, next week or something, or can I call you later or something like that?
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Do you usually have people come to you to make it easier?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't drive. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I don't want to interrupt, but
oh, no.
I have something to say because I've been listening to this, and from my point of view, I'm a Novak's father.
Yes.
My son is 2.5 years old. So he's still a kid. It's everything new to me. You know, I mean, my family, it's all, like, healthy. I have four brothers and three sisters. It's like we're a huge family.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to this disease, it's everything new to us. So
yes.
I have a kind of problems with myself, not related with what my son has, but it's a different problem. And what I want to say is, you know, meeting somebody new, right, or have a friend, and thinking that involving your problem right away, or like talking about your problem, is not gonna cause better relationship. It might ruin it in the end because people don't want to listen to problems. You know,
yeah.
that's just the way it is. People don't want to listen to problems. They don't understand. They don't want that be a part of the day. So basically, whenever I met anybody or I met in my life, it's like whatever I had the problem, I always made excuses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until I fixed the problem. If they want to know, I just tell them a little bit, not everything. People, even you think they want to hear or you want to find somebody who want to hear everything about you and understand you, it's sometimes impossible because even your own siblings or your own parents, they don't understand. If
mm-hmm.
they don't understand and they don't want to hear, how hard is to find somebody else?
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I
so,
and I.
So for me is, and for my son is, I treat him like he's normal. It's obviously he's not, but like normal, like he don't have a disease. If anybody asks, I just tell him a little bit because really, really people don't want to hear. Even if they ask you, if they think that they want to, you know, if you think that they want to hear it, but they don't want to listen to that.
Yeah.
They want everything fun. They want to, you know, have a fun with you. They want to have a good time with you. They don't want to spend the time talking about, you know, this problem or that problem. That's just the way it is. Even
yeah.
when I have a problem with my back, even when I have a problem with my other problems, it's like I keep that in a minimum, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I go for, you know, dating a girl, right, and I tell her right away, oh, I have a back problem, and I just limit myself for some things. I cannot work out. I cannot be, like, eating with her, or, like, I just limit myself, and the people look in that, you know? But
yeah.
in a down the road, if they accept that little by little, you know, it's gonna be, you know, they're gonna be much understandable. So,
mm-hmm.
from my point of view, you don't need to throw everything right away.
Yeah,
you should hide. You should have excuses, and then always see when you meet that person if they are understandable and they're willing to accept whatever you have. That's it. But, you know, throwing
yeah.
everything in one shot, it's very, very, you know, for me, it's not worth it.
Right. Yeah. And I understand that. And you do have a lot of good points. But it is important to still be honest with people because you can't have relationships that are not built on honesty. And you don't want to hide who you are either. I think Shelly was going to speak after Brandy. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm out here in Las Vegas, so I'm totally far from you guys. But
that's all right. We're all over the country here, so sorry.
In terms of relationships, I've had quite a bit of an experience since I used to work in the legal world. And so oftentimes many people couldn't even understand that I had problems. However, I went all over the country and went to world-renowned places, so then I became very fascinating for a while. And then eventually people just became tired of it because they couldn't understand why I wasn't better.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became a situation where anybody's ever sick or has any stomach problems, the first thing they do is call me. Or if they don't agree with a test result or they want my interpretation of it. So it's a weird kind of situation. They don't want to talk about it until it affects their family personally.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found is I'm on TPN. And so you can't really hide that. But, well, you can. I mean, in the winter, none of my friends actually believe I still have a pick in my arm. But in the summer, clearly, it's a little obvious out here since it's scorching hot. It's not like I wear anything other than tank tops.
Right.
So a million and one multicolored, very obvious covers that I wear on my pick because I've come to the point where I really don't give two shits. And so when people ask me, the number one thing they ask me in, like, lying at the grocery store, well, not the grocery store since I don't ever really walk in a grocery store, but a regular store is if I have cancer and if I have something attached to me like they've seen on that commercial, which I find fascinating that anybody would even ask a complete stranger that. But I've dealt with this. 4 years. Mm-hmm. And just like the one point that, you know, you don't look sick, so people judge you. I mean, I've been all over the country and doctors have judged me while I carried reports. So I myself have a very thick skin and a very defiant attitude, and that comes from working in the legal world especially. So I tend to get irritated and defensive with people that question me, whether it's a friend or a doctor or anybody that I feel just frankly judges me. Mm-hmm. And so I've really cleaned house when it comes to friendships, because one of the things that happened in Las Vegas, and I'm in the legal world where it's related to real estate specifically. So when the market crashed, a lot of people started talking about how they lost all their friends, you know, because all of a sudden there weren't all these parties with everything flowing, which is typical of Vegas.
Right.
And I thought, well, they weren't really your friend to begin with. And I had already observed that because of my situations and what I was dealing with. But more so now, like the people that I have known for years, I don't really relate to and find that their friendship contributes value. And it sometimes is because they can't be supportive or because they want to spend the entire time talking about them. And I tend to look for friends because of my personality that aren't a match to me, because oftentimes we would clash. My sign is a Leo, and I'm a Leo to the T. Like, I walk in, and I love interaction with people. And so what I've started doing, because I need to be productive because of what I used to do, and after I battled Social Security for 6 years, and I'm 46, to get my disability, and my hearing was almost 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So it was, I mean, my attorney did not believe I'd get it, and then when we walked out, said, you won, and I still didn't believe it, and they still haven't paid it. So, but I'll fight for me and advocate for myself, because through all this and all these years, I knew enough in my gut to know that certain people were right, certain people were wrong, certain people would be supportive, certain people wouldn't. And it's only when I overrode what my gut told me that I ever found that it will take in the long run. So I have very few friends now. And like the point of dating, I don't really know what I'm going to say, but you know what I'm not going to say? Is that I'm on TPN or anything else until I get to 6 dates, since most men after 3 expect sex, and that's not fucking happening. But I can also tell you that I have had great sex with a pick line in my arm, and the men I've had sex with, one was a boyfriend, one is just what I call my pinch hitter. You know, it doesn't matter. It's all about your attitude. And
Brittany, excuse me 1 minute. I wanted to interject for a minute. We only have less than 5 minutes. I just wanted to give you that warning, but I also just wanted to jump in and I wanted to let everybody know that with all the struggles that you have with relationships, if you have had troubles, just know that this organization is here for you. You all become our extended family. And that gentleman, and I didn't catch his name, who was a parent, first of all, I want to let you know that we have telephone internet programs like this specifically for parents, as well as one for gastroenterologists, one for instruction. Be sure that you look either on our website or on our Facebook for more information. But I also want to say that when he alluded to the fact that nobody wants to listen or nobody wants to hear complaints, I just want to correct that and say there are people, and it's the people here within this organization who certainly understand and are here to listen and provide you with support and information. We even have a newly diagnosed group, which might be good for that gentleman. So just to keep you posted with that, Brittany, I'm sorry I had to interrupt go. We only have a couple more minutes.
And I actually, Mary Angela just basically said what I was going to say, and that is that, you know, we do understand one another here, and we are here for all of you. As Mary Angela said, there are other conferences that are held monthly. There's one specifically for food obstruction. There's one specifically for gastroparesis. There's a newly diagnosed group, and there is a parent group, and as well as a young adult group. And you can find all of those under the upcoming events on the AGMD website. And yes, echoing again what Mary Angela said, the one thing I want all of you to know is that you are not alone, that you do have people out there who truly understand what you are going through. No, we do not all share the exact same, exact same symptoms or conditions or treatments, but we do understand what it is living with motility disorder in our life. And I do appreciate all of you who spoke up, and I'm sorry if you did not get a chance to speak up, but I encourage you to join other conversations conferences. And I encourage you to come back next month. Starting next month, though, I will have up on as part of the on the calendar. I'm getting tongue-tied here. On the calendar, I will have what the topic will be for each month starting next month. I wanted to get a couple down underneath my belt first. But I wish you all a wonderful day and to be as healthy as you possibly can. If you wish to get a hold of me, just email Mary Angela and she can pass on that information to me. I wish you all a wonderful month. And I hope to hear your voices again next month on this call. My best to all of you, and have a wonderful day.
God bless. Brittany, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bless everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brittany.